Dirty Little Secret Number 2, The Ambition Gap. The second dirty little secret, which several prominent American CEOs told me only in a whisper, goes like this. When they send jobs abroad, they not only save 75% on wages, they get a 100% increase in productivity. Part of that is understandable. When you take a low-wage, low-prestige job in America, like a call center operator, and bring it over to India, where it becomes a high-wage, high-prestige job, you end up with workers who are paid less but motivated more. The dirty little secret is that not only is outsourcing cheaper and efficient, the American CEO of a London-headquartered multinational told me, but the quality and productivity boost is huge. In addition to the wage compression, he said, one Bangalore Indian retrained will do the work of two or three Europeans, and the Bangalore employees don't take 6 weeks of holidays. When you think it's only about wages, he added, you can still hold your dignity, but the fact that they work better is awful. In the winter of 2004, I had tea in Tokyo with Richard C. Koo, chief economist for the Nomura Research Institute. I tested out on Richard my coefficient of flatness. That is, the ideal country in a flat world is the one with no natural resources, because countries with no natural resources tend to dig inside themselves. They try to tap the energy, entrepreneurship, creativity, and intelligence of their own people, men and women, rather than drill an oil well. I am a Taiwanese American with a father from Taiwan and a Japanese mother, Koo told me. I was born in Japan and went to Japanese elementary school and then moved to the States. There is a saying in China that whatever you put in your head and your stomach, no one can take away from you. In this whole region, that is in the DNA. You just have to study hard and move forward. I was told relatively early by my teachers, we can never live like Americans and Canadians. We have no resources. We have to study hard, work hard, and export hard. A short time later, I read a column by Stephen Perlstein, the Washington Post's business columnist slash reporter, under the headline, Europe's Capitalism Curtain. From Wrocław, Poland, July 23, 2004, Perlstein wrote, a curtain has descended across Europe. On one side are hope, optimism, freedom, and prospects for a better life. On the other side, fear, pessimism, suffocating government regulations, and a sense that the best times are in the past. This new curtain, Perlstein argued, demarks Eastern Europe, which is embracing capitalism, and Western Europe, which is wishing desperately that it would go away. This time, however, it is the East that is likely to prevail, he continued. The energy and sense of possibility are almost palpable here. Money and companies are pouring in, not just the prestige nameplates like Bombardier, Siemens, Whirlpool, Toyota, and Volvo, but also the network of suppliers that inevitably follows them. At first, most of the new jobs were of the semi-skilled variety. Now they have been followed by design and engineering work that aims to tap into the largest concentration of university students in Eastern Europe. The secret isn't just lower wages. It's also the attitude of workers who take pride and are willing to do what is necessary to succeed, even if it means outsourcing parts production or working on weekends or altering vacation schedules, things that would almost certainly trigger months of acrimony and negotiation in Western Europe. It is that pride and determination, says Wrocław's mayor, that explains why they are such a threat to the leisure time society on the other side of the curtain. I heard a similar refrain in a discussion with consular officials who oversee the granting of visas at the U.S. Embassy in Beijing. As one of them put it to me, I do think Americans are oblivious to the huge changes. Every American who comes over to visit me in China is just blown away. Your average kid in the U.S. is growing up in a wealthy country with many opportunities, and many are the kids of advantaged, educated people and have a sense of entitlement. Well, the hard reality for that kid is that 15 years from now, Wu is going to be his boss, and Zhou is going to be the doctor in town. The competition is coming, and many of the kids are going to move into their 20s clueless about these rising forces. When I asked Bill Gates about the supposed American education advantage, an education that stresses creativity, not rote learning, he was utterly dismissive. In his view, those who think that the more rote learning systems of China and Japan can't turn out innovators who can compete with Americans are sadly mistaken. Said Gates, "I have never met the guy who doesn't know how to multiply who created software. Who has the most creative video games in the world? Japan. I never met these rote people. Some of my best software developers are Japanese. You need to understand things in order to invent beyond them." One cannot stress enough. Young Chinese, Indians, and Poles are not racing us to the bottom. They are racing us to the top. They do not want to work for us. They don't even want to be us. They want to dominate us, in the sense that they want to be creating the companies of the future that people all over the world will admire and clamor to work for. They are in no way content with where they have come so far. I was talking to a Chinese American who works for Microsoft and has accompanied Bill Gates on visits to China. He says Gates is recognized everywhere he goes in China. Young people there hang from the rafters and scalp tickets just to hear him speak. Same with Jerry Yang, the founder of Yahoo. In China today, Bill Gates is Britney Spears. In America today, Britney Spears is Britney Spears. And that is our problem.